Chapter 17. Wish to. Listen, surely there was a knock at the door? Let us go inside the room. I am always uneasy when anybody comes, lest any awkward discovery should be made by a visitor of my miserable contrivances for keeping up the establishment. Joey met them before they had left the landing. Please, Berta, he whispered, Mr. Ladywell has called, and I've showed him into the livery. You know, Berta, this is how it was, you know. I thought you and Mr. Julian were in the drawing room, and wouldn't want him to see ye together, and so I asked him to step into the livery a minute. You must improve your way of speaking, she said, with quick embarrassment, whether at the mention of Ladywell's name before Julian, or at the way Joey coupled herself with Christopher, was quite uncertain. Will you excuse me for a few moments? She said, turning to Christopher. Pray sit down. I shall not be long. And she glided downstairs. They had been standing just by the drawing room door, and Christopher turned back into the room with no very satisfactory countenance. It was very odd, he thought, that she should go down to Ladywell in that mysterious manner, when he might have been admitted to where they were talking without any trouble at all. What could Ladywell have to say, as an acquaintance calling upon her for a few minutes, that he was not to hear? Indeed, if it came to that, what right had Ladywell to call upon her at all, even though she were a widow, and to some extent chartered to live in a way which might be considered a trifle free, if indulged in by other young women? This was the first time that he himself had ventured into her house on that very account, a doubt whether it was quite proper to call, considering her youth, and the fertility of her position as ground for scandal. But no sooner did he arrive than here was Ladywell blundering in, and, since this conjunction had occurred on his first visit, the chances were that Ladywell came very often. Julian walked up and down the room, every moment expanding itself to a minute in his impatience at the delay and vexation at the cause. After scrutinizing for the fifth time every object on the walls, as if afflicted with microscopic closeness of sight, his hands under his coat tails, and his person jigging up and down upon his toes, he heard her coming up the stairs. When she entered the apartment, her appearance was decidedly that of a person subsiding after some little excitement. I did not calculate upon being so long, she said sweetly, at the same time throwing back her face and smiling. But I was longer than I expected. It seemed rather long, said Christopher gloomily, but I don't mind it. I am glad of that, said Ethelberta. As you asked me to stay, I was very pleased to do so, and always should be, but I think that now I will wish you goodbye. You are not vexed with me? She said, looking quite into his face. Mr. Ladywell is nobody, you know. Nobody? Well, he is not much, I mean. The case is, that I am sitting to him for a subject in which my face is to be used otherwise than as a portrait, and he called about it. May I say, said Christopher, that if you want yourself painted, you are ill-advised not to let it be done by a man who knows how to use the brush a little? He can paint. Said Ethelberta, rather warmly. His last picture was excellent, I think. It was greatly talked about. I imagined you to say that he was a mere nobody. Yes, but how provoking you are. Nobody, I mean, to talk to. He is a true artist, nevertheless. Christopher made no reply. The warm understanding between them had quite ended now, and there was no fanning it up again. Sudden tiffs had been the constant misfortune of their courtship in days gone by, had been the remote cause of her marriage to another, and the familiar shadow seemed to be rising again, to cloud them with the same persistency as ever. Christopher went downstairs with well-behaved moodiness, and left the house forthwith. The postman came to the door at the same time. Ethelberta opened a letter from Piketty now at Sandburn again, and, stooping to the firelight, she began to read. My dear Ethelberta, I have tried to like staying at Sandburn, because you wished it, but I can't endure the town at all, dear Berta. Everything is so wretched and dull. Oh, I only wish you knew how dismal it is here, and how much I would give to come to London. I cannot help thinking that I could do better in town. You see, I should be close to you, and should have the benefit of your experience. I would not mind what I did for a living could I be there where you all are. It is so like banishment to be here. If I could not get a pupil teachership in some London school, and I believe I could, by advertising, I could stay with you, and be governess to Georgina and Myrtle, for I am sure you cannot spare time enough to teach them as they ought to be taught, and Emmeline is not old enough to have any command over them. I could also assist at your dressmaking, and you must require a great deal of that to be done if you continue to appear in public. Mr. Long read in the papers the account of your first evening, and afterwards I heard two ladies of our committee talking about it, but of course not one of them knew my personal interest in the discussion. Now will you, Ethelberta, think if I may not come? Do, there's a dear sister. I will do anything you set me about, if I may only come. Your ever affectionate, Piketty. Great powers above, what worries do beset me. Cried Ethelberta, jumping up. What can possess the child so suddenly? She used to like Sandburn well enough. She sat down, and hastily scribbled the following reply. My dear Piketty, there is only a little time to spare before the post goes, but I will try to answer your letter at once. Whatever is the reason of this extraordinary dislike to Sandburn? It is a nice healthy place, and you are likely to do much better than either of our elder sisters, if you follow straight on in the path you have chosen. Of course, if such good fortune should attend me, that I get rich by my contrivances of public storytelling and so on, I shall share everything with you, and the rest of us, in which case you shall not work at all. But although I have been unexpectedly successful so far, this is problematical, and it would be rash to calculate upon all of us being able to live, or even us seven girls only, upon the fortune I am going to make that way. So, though I don't mean to be harsh, I must impress upon you the necessity of going on as you are going just at present. I know the place must be dull, but we must all put up with dullness sometimes. You, being next to me in age, must aid me as well as you can in doing something for the younger ones, and if anybody at all comes and lives here otherwise than as a servant, it must be our father, who will not, however, at present hear of such a thing when I mention it to him. Do think of all this, Piketty, and bear up. Perhaps we shall all be happy and united someday. Joey is waiting to run to the post office with this at once. All are well. Sol and Dan have nearly finished the repairs and decorations of my house, but I will tell you of that another time. Your affectionate sister, Berta. 18. Near Sandburn, London Street, Ethelberta's, when this letter reached its destination the next morning, Piketty, in her over-anxiety, could not bring herself to read it in anybody's presence, and put it in her pocket till she was on her walk across the moor. She still lived at the cottage out of the town, though at some inconvenience to herself, in order to teach at a small village night school, whilst still carrying on her larger occupation of pupil teacher in Sandburn. So she walked and read, and was soon in tears. Moreover, when she thought of what Ethelberta would have replied, had that keen sister known the wildness of her true reason in wishing to go, she shuddered with misery. To wish to to get near a man, only because he had been kind to her, and had admired her pretty face, and had given her flowers, to nourish a passion all the more, because of its hopeless impracticability, were things to dream of, not to tell. Piketty was quite an unreasoning animal. Her sister arranged situations for her, told her how to conduct herself in them, how to make up anew, in unobtrusive shapes, the valuable wearing apparel she sent from time to time so as to provoke neither exasperation in the little gentry, nor superciliousness in the great. Ethelberta did everything for her, in short, and Piketty obeyed orders with the abstracted ease of mind which people show who have their thinking done for them, and put out their troubles as they do their washing. She was quite willing, not to be clever herself, since it was unnecessary while less he had a much admired sister, who was clever enough for two people and to spare. This arrangement, by which she gained an untroubled existence in exchange for freedom of will, had worked very pleasantly for Piketty until the anomaly of falling in love on her own account created a jar in the machinery. Then she began to know how wearing were miserable days, and how much more wearing were miserable nights. She pictured Christopher in London calling upon her dignified sister, for Ethelberta innocently mentioned his name sometimes in writing, and imagined over and over again the mutual signs of warm feeling between them. And now Piketty resolved upon a noble course. Like Juliet, as he had been troubled with a consciousness that perhaps her love for Christopher was a trifle forward and unmaidenly, even though as he had determined never to let him, or anybody in the whole world know of it. To set herself to pray, that she might have strength, to see him without a pang the lover of her sister, who deserved him, so much more than herself, would be a grand penance and corrective. After uttering petitions to this effect for several days, she still felt very bad. Indeed, in the psychological difficulty of striving for what in her soul she did not desire, rather worse, if anything. At last, weary of walking the old road, and never meeting him, and blank in a general powerlessness, she wrote the letter to Ethelberta, which was only the last one of a series that had previously been written and torn up. Now this hope had been whirled away like thistledown, and the case was grievous enough to distract a greater stoic than Piketty. The end of it was that she left the school on insufficient notice, gave up her cottage home on the plea true in the letter that she was going to join a relative in London, and went off thither by a morning train, leaving her things packed ready to be sent on when she should write for them. Piketty arrived in town late on a cold February afternoon, bearing a small bag in her hand. She crossed Westminster Bridge on foot, just after dusk, and saw a luminous haze hanging over each well-lighted street as it withdrew into distance behind the nearer houses, showing its direction as a train of morning mist shows the course of a distant stream, when the stream itself is hidden. The lights along the riverside towards Charing Cross sent an inverted palisade of gleaming swords down into the shaking water, and the pavement ticked to the touch of pedestrians' feet, most of whom tripped along, as if walking only to practice a favorite quick step, and held handkerchiefs to their mouths, to strain off the river mist from their lungs. She inquired her way to Exonbury Crescent, and between 5 and 6 o'clock reached her sister's door. 2 or 3 minutes were passed in accumulating resolution sufficient to ring the bell, which when at last she did, was not performed in a way at all calculated to make the young man Joey hasten to the door. After the lapse of a certain time he did, however, find leisure to stroll and see what the caller might want, out of curiosity to know who there could be in London afraid to ring a bell twice. Joey's delight exceeded even his surprise, the ruling maxim of his life, being the more the merrier, under all circumstances. The beaming young man was about to run off, and announce her upstairs and downstairs, left and right, when Piketty called him hastily to her. In the hall her quick young eye had caught sight of an umbrella with a peculiar horn handle, an umbrella as he had been accustomed to meet on Sandburn Moor on many happy afternoons. Christopher was evidently in the house. Joey, apostrophe she said, as if she were ready to faint, don't tell Bert I am come. She has company, has she not? Apostrophe, oh no, only Mr. Julian. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the brother. He's quite one of the family. Apostrophe, apostrophe, never mind, can't I go down into the kitchen with you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she inquired. There had been bliss and misery mingled in those tidings, and she scarcely knew for a moment which way they affected her. What she did know was that S.E. had run her dear fox to earth, and a sense of satisfaction at that feat prevented her just now from counting the cost of the performance. Does Mr. Julian come to see her very often? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said she. Oh yes, he's always a coming a regular bore to me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, a regular what? Apostrophe, apostrophe, bore. Ah, I forgot, you don't know our town words. However, come along. Apostrophe, apostrophe, they passed by the doors on tiptoe, and their mother upstairs being, according to Joey's account, in the midst of a nap, Piketty was unwilling to disturb her, so they went down at once to the kitchen, when forward rushed Gwendoline the cook, flourishing her flowery hands, and Cornelia the housemaid, dancing over her brush. And these having welcomed and made Piketty comfortable, who should ring the area bell, and be admitted down the steps, but Sol and Dan. The workman brothers, their day's duties being over, had called to see their relations, first, as usual, going home to their lodgings in Marylebone and making themselves as spruce as bridegrooms, according to the rules of their newly acquired town experience. For the London mechanic is only 9 hours a mechanic, though the country mechanic works, eats, drinks, and sleeps a mechanic throughout the whole 24. God bless my soul, Piketty. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Dan, standing fixed. Well, I say, this is splendid, ha ha. Apostrophe, Piketty, what brought you here? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Sol, expanding the circumference of his face in satisfaction. Well, come along, never mind, so long as you be here. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Piketty explained circumstances as well as she could without stating them, and, after a general conversation of a few minutes, Sol interrupted with anybody upstairs with Mrs. Peterwin? Apostrophe, 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 Mr. Julian was there just now, apostrophe, said Joey, but he may be gone. Berta always lets him slip out how he can, the form of ringing me up not being necessary with him. Wait a minute, I'll see. Apostrophe, Joseph vanished up the stairs, and, the question whether Christopher were gone, or not being an uninteresting one to the majority, the talking went on upon other matters. When Joey crept down again a minute later, Piketty was sitting aloof and silent, and he accordingly singled her out to speak to. Such a lark, Piketty. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he whispered. Bert is a courting of her young man. Would you like to see how they carries on a bit? Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.